time for Wednesday's hour number two on Hashtag Daily K with your host, Peter Bint. Korean dramas, movies, and even lyrics. Why is the world paying attention to Korean stories?
From classics to modern masterpieces, time to dig deep into the charms of Korean literature.
And check it out.
With Paul.
At this time on a Wednesday, we introduce various Korean literature pieces to you, talk about their cultural implications, and the man who does it is Paul.
It's me!
Jeffrey Matthews. How are
Richard
you, sir?
Matthews. It's not Jeffrey, it's Richard.
Richard Jeffrey. It's by the by. No one really cares.
Do you have a middle name?
I have a middle name that is Korean.
Nam.
It's a mistake, yes. Nam.
Peter Nam Bint.
Yeah, it should have been Tre, but it turned out to be Nam. My dad registered it incorrectly at the hospital, and we didn't bother to change it.
I still like Nam. Sounds good.
No offence to Nams out there, but I am a Tre, so I really wanted Tre in my name.
You're also a Nam. You're a Namja.
I'm a Namja. I'm a Nam. I'm a stranger as well to many people out there. We could put lots of Nam labels to me.
To eat? Nam, 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 nam.
That's not what we say. Nyum, 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 nyum. I wish my middle name was Nyum. There's no Nyams out there, are there, in Korea?
Not in Korea. Certainly not Koreans.
No, maybe in Southeast Asia. Let us know if you've got Nyam in your name. We can play a game. 3rd of April. 1st April, Wednesday of 2024. You've come in, Paul. How do you feel to be here?
I feel good.
You feel great.
It's my birthday month.
It's your birthday month?
Yeah,
April the 10th?
12th.
12th. Oh, nearly.
Nearly, yeah, nearly. Next week.
Big plans, party, soiree.
April 10th, I'll be here.
Yay. Oh, my goodness. The pressure's on then, because you've now told me that you're going to be here on the 10th next week.
Yeah.
It's your birthday.
And it's my birthday on the 12th.
Oh, okay. So what do I do for that?
I don't know.
Well, it's two days before your birthday that you're here.
Right? Yes.
So technically, I don't have to do anything. If it was your birthday day, I would be a right little so-and-so if I didn't do something. But 2 days before, that seems a bit over the top, does it not?
Oh, so when you were at school and your friend had a birthday on a Sunday and you weren't going to see them, you wouldn't give them a card on a Friday?
If I was invited to their birthday party, you know...
Yeah, and they had the party on the Friday.
If it's on the Friday, sure. So if you're having a party in the studio...
I am. Party on the studio next Wednesday, 10 a.m.
All right, then it's a deal. It is on. we are talking about Korea and its culture, and we do it through its literature every Wednesday. We've got Eeyore saying, a happy early birthday, Paul. That must be the first happy birthday
it is
got this
year.
Year.
Thank you very much.
Well done. What do you usually do to mark your birthday, Paul? Do you go out for a meal or something?
Or have a meal at home.
Oh,
there's
really?
Usually some sparkling wine.
Oh.
Yeah.
A little bit of champagne.
Well, the champagne's expensive.
Yeah, and it's just about where the grapes were grown. You can get
a nice budget bottle of sparkling that tastes good. Maybe some Italian food.
Oh.
Maybe some Indian food, I don't know.
That you might even cook at home.
Possibly.
You not cooking, I assume, on your birthday.
I might do.
Really?
Why not?
Because it's your birthday. I just want to sit back and be, like, fed grapes and fanned, no?
I've never had a birthday like that. Certainly not in Korea.
That's my idea for next Wednesday, then. We'll get you in a toga.
In a chaise longue.
And I will feed you shine muskets.
Sounds good to me.
All morning long. Speaking of... something you just mentioned, which I've now forgotten, but I still remember what it reminded me of, the audiobook. You always recommend audiobooks to
me. I do.
And I kind of fell out of love with them for a little while, and then I got one that I'm listening to at the moment that was turned into a film. That's why I listened to it. I didn't watch the film. Fault in Our Stars.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar with
it. It's a very famous book, a very popular book.
Did you read it?
Not yet, but I've heard very good things about it.
Yeah, it's really emotional, you know, about teenagers with cancer. And... Why did that suddenly come up? There's something you said about 3 minutes ago, which would make this relevant. Now it's totally not relevant, but I do recommend it. But it's very emotional, very much a tearjerker.
Yeah, I think that's why it was popular. It's young adult fiction, and it was sort of letting teenagers into an experience that they may not have had or they may have heard about through friends and being able to relate to it, which is what books are all about. And I think each week... I'm bringing in a book that enables us to relate to Koreans and the Korean experience in a different way.
Yeah, today is it a bit of young adult fiction for teenagers?
No, today's a bit middle-aged, but not in a bad way.
Okay, just like us.
I guess. Today we're heading to China. And it's okay. a short novel that deals with the Korean experience abroad. It's called 상하이에 두고 온 사람들, People I Left in Shanghai. It's by Gong Sun-ok, translated by Jun Sung-hee.
Oh, okie dokie.
And we join this narrator, and she's off to China. And there she goes to a homestay and meets a woman whose ancestry is Korean and a man who saved up all his money to visit China in his old age.
Oh.
And she's sort of plonked together with them, stuck with him for just a night and a day. But a lot happens and we learn a lot in that very, very short time.
Okay, so this is not a novel I immediately thought of, you know, back when Korea was occupied. Many Koreans were living in parts of China, Manchuria,
yeah.
And in Shanghai they had the provisional government. But this is not that time. This is like a visit
afterwards.
No,
this
afterwards.
Is later on. But and okay. We'll get to this in part three, talking about the Korean diaspora.
Oh.
And how many Koreans actually live outside of Korea.
That's interesting. And in particular, I'm very curious about how many live in China, you know, because I often think about, obviously, coming from the UK, the diaspora there in New Malden and whatnot, and in LA.
Yeah.
I often talk about it in China, to be honest.
Not too much. We do, but not necessarily on this show.
And not necessarily thinking of them in the same way, right?
You haven't read part three, have you?
No, I haven't. Okay, so People I Left in Shanghai. The author, is this the first time featuring Gong?
It is, Gong Sun-ok. Very glad that we get to feature her. She was born in Goksung in South Chola Province. Before that was a big horror movie. It's actually a real place and a very nice place.
I wonder how that place feels about that movie.
I'm not sure. It's a very quiet sort of rural area.
Uh-huh.
So she was born there in 1963. She was born in a poor family.
Mm.
So they were working hard, they were tilling the fields, they were farming, but she developed a passion for reading. She read everything she could get her hands on.
Wow.
And as she was growing up, she started to realize, okay, we're all living in the 60s and the 70s, but it feels like some of us, depending on our class, are living in a different time period.
Ah.
Like us here in the fields, it's like we're living in the Chosun Dynasty.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're in Seoul and you have a lot of money, you're living in the 20th century.
That's an interesting observation. Very accurate.
Yeah. And, well, she was a student around the time of the Gwangju Uprising. And
oh.
She was actually there. She survived it. She was part of the citizen army.
Oh, goodness.
As a student.
That must have been very formative.
Really impactful on her life. It was that her upbringing in poverty and the Gwangju Uprising are two sort of things that really drove through her fiction and through her writing.
Wow.
And she moved to Seoul, she got married, she didn't have an easy life, and so she didn't start publishing her writing until the early 90s.
Okay.
But then she's gone on to be very successful. Her work is quite autobiographical. It's fictional, but it's based on, you know, her experiences and her traumas and her ideas.
Yeah.
And it's also women-centered.
Okay.
Which is really important to have these voices and views. We have a lot of younger women writers, but we also need women who are a little bit older offering their experiences in this way.
Yeah.
So it's the first time to feature her. Very exciting to have her work on the show.
Lovely. The translator, Jun Sung-hee, definitely remember the name.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like we featured her in a little while,
though. No, it's been a little while. I think when we first started, we featured a lot of her translations.
Okay.
Because she was one of the early adopters, shall we say, of translating Korean literature into English. She translated a lot of short fiction, short novels, and short stories. She also translates from English to Korean. She's translated a couple of dozen at least works from Korean to English. And so you'll find her often in older translations. I don't think she's published too much nowadays.
Okay.
But certainly, say, a decade ago or 15 years ago, she was at the forefront of translating Korean literature into English.
Oh, lovely. And some of the works from some famous authors like Han Gang.
Because she was one of these translators working on this series of short fiction and short novels by one particular publisher.
Okay.
That means they were selecting work from all over the literature scene and trying to get a big sample of Korean writing into English.
Nice. Okay, so we're going to get into our first reading. We do three actual excerpts from the translated book, with the permission, of course, of the translator and the publisher. This one today, it's not one of those freebies that you can find online.
No, this is an actual book I've had in my house for quite a while.
Oh,
so
nice.
You can still get it, yeah. But I think only physical copies may be available.
Okie dokie. People I Left in Shanghai. Do we need to set the scene? You said it's quite a short novel.
Yeah, and we're starting at the beginning. We're going to fly to Shanghai. I flew to Shanghai on the last plane from Incheon. When I landed at the Shanghai Pudong International Airport, the city was submerged in darkness. I took a bus, got off at the first stop, Longyanglu Station. A young mid-20s Korean man was waiting for me with a van. He had come from the homestay house where I had made a reservation. This rather nasty-looking man took me to the homestay house, collected lodging charges, and then disappeared. My hasty online search at the Incheon airport had turned up this place, the Lover's Villa. It may have been a legitimate business with an official permit, but I found it strange that the homestay house was an apartment. A Chinese woman of Korean descent greeted me at the door. She used a North Korean dialect mixed with a Gyeongsangdo accent. She introduced herself as having come from Shenyang. She seemed to be the only person in the Lover's Villa. There was no trace of guests other than myself. It was the off-season, though. The woman offered more information about herself, saying, "My grandfather was from Gyeongsangdo, Andong, Gyeongsang province." I could feel that she wanted to be friends with me, but I didn't feel like bothering. I was tired. Rather than talking with her, I wanted to sleep. While I was unpacking, she lingered in my room and picked up my passport from off the floor. "Your surname is the same as mine!" she exclaimed. I pretended to be glad, although I found her prying into her customers' personal belongings grating. I couldn't act displeased, though, not toward a person who was so happy over something as little as a shared surname. She looked like someone who'd get excited just to meet someone from her home country.
Betty says, today's first excerpt reminds me that we have a few Korean listeners in Shanghai as well. Ooh. I hope so. They don't pipe up often, to be honest. And Tigris says, someone sounds grumpy and someone sounds like a bit of an airhead in this reading.
Okay, so I'm grumpy and Peter's the airhead.
We're talking about the book characters here. I don't mind being an airhead rather than being grumpy, but... The narrator, yeah, doesn't seem like she's got the patience or she's maybe too tired.
She's just had a flight. She's flown from Incheon to Shanghai.
Flying around the world. Isn't that like a couple of hours?
She's booked this at the last minute. It's obvious she's stressed. She's tired. She just wants to have a bit of a rest. Would you like somebody fiddling through your belongings?
All right. So Paul is the grumpy one and I am the airhead. Yeah, because it seems like she's very friendly. All right. I would not pick up someone's passport.
Well, this is the thing, because a passport is a very precious item.
Yeah.
And one wonders when going to somewhere for the first time.
Yeah.
Can you trust the person you're meeting?
Of course. And then looking at your passport, maybe getting essential details out of there. Is she a con artist or something?
At the moment, no, we don't think so. Just excited.
Remember that phrase, at the moment.
She's just very, very friendly and she seems excited to have some company, especially someone who is Korean. Because even though she wasn't born in Korea, she's got Korean ancestry, you know, a grandfather coming from Andong. This is a big deal for her.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, but not so much for the narrator. The narrator's here in Shanghai. She's got to get a ticket to Hangzhou to meet her friend.
Uh-huh.
And the woman at the homestay is like, I'll get it for you tomorrow.
Wow.
We'll go and get the ticket. Don't worry.
She's so helpful.
Yes. And so she goes for a nap. And as she's napping, she hears another voice. And this woman is arguing with someone. And it turns out there's an old Korean man staying here. And the argument is all about whether China is a socialist country. And the man is going, but it's a Chinese socialist. And the woman's like, no, it's all about the money. Money matters here. It's all that matters.
Okay.
And then the woman comes and says, come and have some watermelon, come and have some snacks. And so she goes into the living room, yeah. meets the old man. He turns out not to have taken a plane. He's travelled by ship.
That's
taken him 3 months.
3 months?
Yeah, he's saved up 500,000 won just so he could come to China.
Wow.
And there are hints that he used to be maybe some kind of scholar or academic and was wealthy, but maybe recently he's been homeless and living at Seoul Station.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So he brings out a bottle of Chinese liquor and he's okay. like, come on, have a drink. Come on, have a drink with me.
Okay.
And she's tired,
yeah.
but she wants to be polite, so she agrees. Okay. The woman is upset by this. It's like, oh, you know, he drinking in the living room.
Oh.
And then the man is, he brings out some peanuts and some dried squid and he's like, do you have any other snacks? And the woman at the home says, you can go look in the fridge yourself.
Oh, so she's not at all friendly to him.
No, no, it really seems to be quite nasty towards him. He comes back with a shriveled fruit
yeah.
that the narrator's never seen before called a loquat.
Oh.
It's a local product. And the woman at the homestead's like, what do you mean? Like, you mean there's no loquats in Korea? You don't have them?
Oh, she didn't know.
Yeah, okay. She thinks that this is standard, this is ordinary. And there's more fighting between the old man and the woman. This time it's about him only paying one night stay, but he stayed for 3 nights. And,
uh-oh.
Yeah, it's all a bit weird. And as the chatting and fighting continues, we find out that the woman wants to go and live in Korea.
Ah,
she wants to go to Korea.
That's why she wants to be friends.
Yeah. And the old man is here in China because he's following in the footsteps of his father who died here as a soldier.
Oh,
he's
wow.
sort of paying his respects.
Okay.
And eventually the narrator goes to bed, the woman goes to bed, the old man's left to drown his sorrows and talk to himself.
Okay.
And then night passes, next morning... The woman, as she promised, says, okay, let's go get you a train ticket.
Nice.
The old man is sort of not stalking them, but sort of tagging along, following after them.
It's a bit unusual.
Yeah. And the woman and the narrator wait in line at the station to get the ticket. And as they're waiting, they start talking. And that's where the second reading will take off.
Here we go.
The woman entered what looked like a subway station, not a train station, for my ticket. When I got inside, I saw that there was a long line at the ticket counter. I can get a ticket here, right? I asked her. We'll know when we get it. Thank you so much. I slept and ate well, thanks to you. I gave her a formal thank you. I felt genuinely grateful for her help with the ticket. She stared at me. The old man also hovered nearby. Neither said anything, and both looked at me expectantly. Miss Anne, could you do me a favour? The woman said. She looked at me eagerly. The look on her face made my hair stand on end. Pardon me, a favour? I'm doing you a favour, right? Why? Because we're fellow countrywomen, so please do your fellow countrymen a favour in return, will you? What do you want me to do? I'll decide after I know what it is. Miss Anne, please invite me to Korea. The line in front of me was half as long as when I joined it. What? How? I went to Korea last year and got expelled at the airport. I paid 8 million won for a fake marriage with a Korean man, but he disappeared after collecting the money. I tried to call him at the airport, but he never picked up. I was kicked out right at the gates. The old man had gone off and purchased some soft drinks for us. He opened one and handed it to her. Working at this homestay house is a waste of time. I earn 140,000 won a month from this job, but I heard that I could earn 1 million won a month doing the same thing in Korea. I'm really in a hurry. I have to pay back the 8 million won I borrowed for the fake marriage. I'd like to find that guy who ran away with my money too. Anyway, I have to make money. Miss Anne, please do me this favour. The line was getting shorter, and the woman was speaking faster and in familiar speech. I didn't know how I could bring her with me, and what I would do after that.
This is getting more scammy. Smells a bit fishy. So it seems like she's using her. there's a way to career.
Or trying to, at least.
Okay.
Trying to sort of persuade her to be her in, to be the person who's going to help her get the visa or whatever it may be.
I'm getting very suspicious vibes.
Well, you only met this person yesterday.
Yeah.
They picked up your passport. They're then saying, please invite me to Korea.
Through, like, pretending to help me out as well.
Well, no, she's buying the train ticket for her. She is doing something nice, but what she's asking for in return is a really big deal.
It's like a business transaction. I do you one favor, you do me one.
Yeah, and the narrator feels uncomfortable. Feels really, really more and more uncomfortable.
Especially
this shift from being quite formal and polite into sort of talking as if we're friends. Because in Korean, that's a big deal. The way that we address people, the honorifics we use, or the tone of language we use.
Yeah, and that whole story as well. Do we even know that's real, this fake marriage?
We don't.
Okay.
And the woman then says, look, your train's not to the afternoon. The old man, by the way, decides he's going to go to Hangzhou as well. He's going
together
to get on the same train. Yeah.
Weird.
It's all very weird. And she says, look, I'll take you on a tour of the city before your train leaves. I'll show you the sights. Narrator, meanwhile, is just wishing, I want to disappear right now.
But she's too polite. She doesn't say anything like this. Okay.
But then, as they're walking, the woman from the homestay and the old man get into a fight on the street and start cursing at each other in Korean. It's all about the money again. And the narrator's like, people are seeing them with me here, and this is not good. I do not want to be seen with them.
Uh-oh.
And she just wants to walk away. Luckily, she gets a phone call from her friend. And her friend's like, yeah, I know we're meant to meet in Hangzhou, but there's an alumni who wants to meet us in Suzhou.
Okay.
You know, from our university in Korea. He's here, you know, so come, you know, just get rid of your train ticket, get a new one, come and meet me there. The narrator drops her train ticket on the ground.
On purpose?
She's like, I'm not going to Hangzhou.
Okay.
And runs away, gets a ticket at the station, and goes to see a friend, leaving the old man and the woman, who knows what they're doing now, in Shanghai. They are the people I left behind in Shanghai.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And so she goes to Suzhou, meets a friend and President Kim, this alumnus, who's rather overbearing. He takes them out for dinner and he's controlling the conversation and she's not enjoying it. He's spitting everywhere as he talks, all over the food.
Well, sounds like it's a disaster of a trip.
Yeah, and he's talking about the North Korean scammers and the criminals you can find in China and how dangerous it can be. And then he's like, okay, let's go drinking, let's go to another place. And she's like, I can't deal with this. Sorry, I have to go to my hotel room. Oh. And a friend goes off with the alumnus, and she goes back to the hotel room and sleeps the sleep of the dead.
Okay.
Sleeps very, very well because she's exhausted. And then she meets with a friend and President Kim again the next day, and that's where our final reading will take off.
Oh, I'm curious. So that's the people she left behind in Shanghai, just a short and sweet meeting with them.
President Kim showed up very early the next morning with his car. I felt burdened by his kindness, and I poked my friend's side and said, I'm grateful, but I also feel bad about all of this. My friend immediately reported it to him. She said she's grateful, but she also feels bad about all of this. President Kim laughed generously. You've just come from my home country. Was it because the old man was from the proprietress's home country? Did the woman take a taxi to fetch the old man because he was from her home country? I had no way of knowing. I should have forgotten them. I wanted to. Although my friend wanted to go to Zhoujian Garden, President Kim drove us out of downtown Suzhou and took us to Taihu Lake. You don't know how great this lake is, he said. On our way to Taihu Lake, the Great Lake, there were lengthy stretches of orchards on both sides of the road. I couldn't tell whether they were peach orchards or apricot orchards. President Kim, what kinds of trees are these? I asked. What? Oh, these are loquat trees. They're really cheap and delicious here. I remembered the loquats at the homestay house in Shanghai. They were wrinkled and unattractive looking, but the old man ate them with relish despite the woman's ill treatment. Could you stop here for a minute? I asked. What? Why? Do you need to go to the bathroom? No reason. I wasn't sure if I could tell them the story about the old man and the woman in Shanghai. I was even more unsure if I could tell them about the wrinkled loquats. The air overwhelmed me when I got out of the car. I headed straight to the loquat orchard. My friend opened the window and shouted, "Hey, what are you doing? It's too hot! Let's go!" Despite my friend's calls, I kept going deep into the orchard. I thought of Yenan below a loquat tree. Were there loquat trees in Yenan too? Was the Yenan the old man mentioned Yanan? Were there any loquats in Korea? The wind shook the trees. It must have been wind from the Taihu Lake, the great lake that President Kim had mentioned.
Is that it? The ambiguous ending that I deplore?
Yes.
Lovely.
Sorry, Peter, but yeah, some stories end with the moment where you go, ah, here we are.
Well, she just randomly got out and sat among the loquats.
Yeah, but it's this connection with these strange two people she met in Shanghai.
She didn't really seem to like...
No, but she's trying to work it out.
Okay.
She's trying to understand why the woman let the man stay for 3 days when he only paid for one.
Yeah.
Kept arguing with him, but wanted to show him around. At one point, when he got lost, she got a taxi to go and find him.
Oh, wow.
So she's been both incredibly kind, but also been incredibly cruel to him.
That's way above and beyond, you know, being a homestay hostess.
Yeah, but they're all connected. And this is the thing that she's also trying to deal with. The reason why she's meeting President Kim is because he's Korean and he's in China and she's in China.
He even said that. That's the reason,
yeah,
right?
The reason why she met the woman in the homestay and the woman was so happy to greet her was because she was Korean and the woman has Korean ancestry. The old man, Korean, with a connection to China.
Yeah.
It's all about this connection that Koreans have. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways more than some other nationalities. I don't think British people will feel the same way quite.
Mm.
Because British people have spread about and colonized and done all sorts of stuff. But Koreans and the Korean diaspora have a really interesting relationship. I mean, you grew up as part of the Korean diaspora.
Yeah.
You were mostly growing up in the UK.
Yeah, and whenever you'd hear someone speak Korean back then, which was much more rare than now.
Yeah.
We didn't live in, like, Koreatown or anything. You felt like, oh, that's lovely. There's some Koreans here. And then I was too shy when I was a kid, but my mum would 100% start talking to whoever
it
was and ask, are you here traveling or you're living here? They'd exchange numbers. It was before mobile phones, so they'd then call on the landline. Sometimes you'd become good friends. Sometimes it would just be a couple of conversations and that was it.
Yeah, but it was the fact that you were comrades in a strange land.
Yeah.
In the same way, when I first came to Korea in 2000, every distinct foreigner would do the foreign and odd as you passed them.
Yeah,
because you would only see a couple of non-Koreans a week in my neighborhood, for example.
Uh-huh.
And if you saw someone, you just give a little nod to say, I recognize you. Hey, we're in this together, as it were.
Oh, nice.
So there is this. And because of the turbulent history of the 20th century when it comes to Korea, we have so many communities of Koreans all over the world.
Yeah.
And there are large numbers in China, in Japan, in Russia. Of course, we have them in the US, in the UK and elsewhere.
Yeah.
And each community feels distinctly Korean as well as their own nationality.
Yeah. They must be like second, third, maybe even fourth generation now.
Some of them have
grown up completely in that foreign land, but also with a Korean identity.
Exactly. I know a number of Korean Americans. I know you as a Korean British person who may not have grown up here, but maybe visited and then decided, okay, I'm gonna work here. I'm gonna spend some of my life here, or maybe I'm gonna settle here.
Sure.
But the big difference is, how easy was it for you to get your first visa to come to Korea?
No, because my mum was Korean. Simple, very simple. Well, I mean, the only problem was getting the family registry, but that was a technical thing.
But it's not just your mum being Korean.
Mm-hmm.
There was another easy thing.
Oh.
Your dad was British.
Oh, really? I didn't take that into account. Like,
yeah, coming from the UK,
uh-huh,
it's much easier to get onto the F visa. I think it's the F4.
Yes.
Yeah, which is the visa that Koreans from the Korean diaspora coming to Korea get. But do Chinese Koreans get F4s?
I don't know.
I think they get a different visa.
Oh, really?
Russian Koreans?
Oh,
different
my
visa.
Goodness.
Yeah, there's a two-tier or even three-tier system when it comes to how Koreans are treated.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
There's an attitude towards Korean Chinese in Korea.
Yeah, they've got a certain name. They're not Gyopos, they're Joseonjok, right?
Yeah, and also they're looked down on more.
Of course.
Yeah, and they're treated badly. Awful. There are stereotypes about the neighborhoods where they live, about
Absolutely.
Them being either dirty or loud or violent. There's other things all wrapped up in the fact that they're connected to China as opposed to connected to the US.
Yeah, that is really difficult to pass because a lot of people I respect and know will talk about people from Joseonjok or from China originally, yeah. originally from Korea, to be honest, in very disparaging terms. I'll be like, you can't generalize like that. And they're like, okay, I'm not generalizing, but a lot of, and then it goes down that route of, you know,
oh, yeah,
what a lot of racists would
but
say.
Then
right?
I refer back to your comment earlier where you talked about Shanghai being the place where the provisional government of Korea was set up.
Yeah.
There's a very positive connection to Shanghai, and yet a Korean living in Shanghai has to try and do a fake marriage to get to go to Korea.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Is that perception, depending on where you settled, where your yeah. ancestors settled, right?
And then it also, it brings to me, to my mind, the big question of what is it to be Korean? What does it mean to be Korean?
Mm.
Like you, I'd look at you and I would say you're Korean and you're also British
yeah.
in my eyes.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about yourself, but that's how I see you.
Yeah, I feel both as well. And I'm guessing Chinese, Koreans, a lot of them will feel both, you know, because
yeah.
they grew up in China. They speak Chinese as
exactly.
well as Korean.
But the question is, how do others see you?
Yeah.
And I wonder that you've become quite well known in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
You've been on a TV show about being a father.
Yeah.
But what kind of father are you?
A British father.
Yeah.
Of course.
And this is the big difference, is you're not a Korean father, you're
yeah.
a British father, even though you are Korean.
Sure.
And I acknowledge you are Korean. So there's all sorts of issues we need to unpack in Korea as to what it means to be Korean. I'm a marriage immigrant. I'm
mm-hmm.
not Korean yet, but
yeah.
I hope to get citizenship. But I know that even if I have a Korean passport, there will be people in this country who will not consider me to be Korean.
Yeah, that is a hurdle even further down the line
oh, yeah.
in Korea, right? For foreigners who have maybe lived here the vast majority of their lives,
exactly.
who are Korean citizens, if you look like Paul Matthews, you're not considered Korean by many.
Oh, yeah, and I'm at peace with that.
Uh-huh.
But as you said, things need to change. But first of all, I would like you to be recognized as Korean
mm-hmm.
fully.
Yeah, you know, that's a complicated issue even for me, like, when I was not on Korean TV, and, you know, there were Brits and Americans on Korean TV, I'd be like, is it because I'm half Korean that I'm not getting these opportunities? And in those cases, I'd be like, you should see me as British as that fully British DNA-wise
sure.
guy. And so that would get me cross. And then now I'm there, I'm kind of worried that some fully British people are thinking, well, he's Korean. His mum's Korean, so he shouldn't be having these roles talking about Britain. What does he know?
But you know both.
Yeah.
You are both.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. It's interesting, and how you're perceived by the general public is obviously very important in media. But it is, the bottom line, what you consider yourself to be, you are, right? It shouldn't matter what other
exactly.
people
and here think. We see three Koreans from three different, very different backgrounds, and there is a connection. And
yeah.
whether they like it or not, they are connected.
Wow, what a cool, quirky little tale that
yeah.
is, that gets you on a deep trail of thought there. Your one-line review, please, Paul.
An unusual tale about the ties that bind us even when we are strangers but share the same country of origin.
That's why me and Paul are such good friends. Next week's book.
We've got Boat Song by Kim Tong-in, translated by Grace Chung. We're going from the collection that was titled Sweet Potato in English. We covered the Sweet Potato story before. We're doing another story from that collection
nice.
Next week.
Thank you, Paul, for your wonderful readings. We'll see you next week.
Thanks to you. Thanks to everyone. Thanks, as always, to the Literature Translation Institute of Korea. And thanks to Gong Sun Ok for her interesting story and Jun Sung Hee for her translation. I'll be back next week with another book.
You can listen to Check It Out with Paul Matthews on Arirang Radio's hashtag Daily K every Wednesday from 10 a.m. KST.